Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform where our mission is to make buying easy. Welcome to Bits About Books. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give you a shout out to each of you in our following episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Today we have with us Liz Wendling and we will speak about her brand new bestseller, The Heart of Authentic Selling.
We've all been sold to. We've all felt what it's like to have someone pretend they like you or want to help you, but they're really only trying to sell you something. And it's busting out of the model of I want to sell you something, and it's going in your body and into your heart and saying, if you're the right person and if I'm the right person for you, then you and I are going to have a conversation where I'm going to listen to you, I'm going to uncover your needs, and I'm going to do it in a way where you are fully and truly respected. And if you say no, I'm okay with that. But if you say yes, I'll be okay with that as well. I don't use force or manipulation. There's none of that. And when you come from a genuine, authentic place, people feel that. They know you're there to not finesse that quick sale. They know that you're there for their best interest.
Liz Wendling is a nationally recognized speaker, sales consultant, and author of 6 books. She's driven by the mantra, it's not what you sell, it's how you sell that matters. Liz understands the sales challenges that professionals face when selling in today's competitive environment and shows them how to make a profound difference in their sales approach, language, and process, both online and offline. Now, onto this empathetic episode with Liz Wendling. Liz, welcome to Bits About Books. I'm really thrilled to have you here and talk about your latest book, The Heart of Authentic Selling.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get into the book, I really want to know what prompts someone to write the 6th book on sales.
This one felt as if it actually came straight from my heart, as cheesy and corny as it might sound. The other books, almost all of my other books, I wrote with my head and felt like it wasn't really coming through me. It was something coming from my head versus something being birthed from me. And The Heart of Authentic Selling allowed me to really go deep into the process for myself and how I want it to be when I show up for potential clients, when I do a speaking engagement, when I'm talking to someone in a sales conversation, all the way to when I'm coaching and consulting. I wanted to do that deep dive into myself and look at how I was being and how I was showing up in all of my interactions. And it was a beautiful journey for me. And I feel like the person who came out the other side is a different businesswoman.
That's saying something after so many years of being in this role. So tell me, I mean, when exactly did the process start?
The book that I wrote right before this one was called Sell Without Selling Your Soul, and it was a book for women. And that was the book that opened me up a little bit more and opened up that space for me that, I wonder if there's still something left to say. And even though that book was geared directly toward women, I had a couple of men say to me, gosh, this information is relevant to me as well. And they stumbled upon it because their wife was reading it or their spouse was reading it. And they said, gosh, you know, I'm really enjoying this book, honey. You might enjoy it as well. And then I got feedback from men saying, this is pertinent information. And that's when I thought, I wonder if I should just expose it all, men and women, and bring that message out to anybody who wants to sell from their heart, not their head. And that was really how the process started and opened up. And I would say that was about 3 years ago.
So what is so different about selling from the heart?
I believe it sounds different. It feels different. People can tell when you're coming from your heart, not your head. They can feel that you are more interested in the human being than just finessing a quick sale. It feels as though the person is coming to you and talking to you like you're the most important person they'll ever talk to all day. There's something about a connection that opens people up versus what can I sell you today? And it's subtle and powerful, and sometimes it's very overt and powerful. But a lot of people these days say, oh, I'm not selling, I'm just sharing, or I'm serving, I'm not selling. But the energy they're showing up with is the energy of selling. So you can declare that you're not selling and show up as serving, but your energy is saying something completely different. And I believe in energy, and I could feel people's energy, and I could see the energy that people are interacting with me. And I knew that there was a thing, and I had to figure out how can I write about that so that people understand you can't say one thing and show up in a different way and have people buy into that.
That's wonderful, because now I see where authentic fits into the scheme. I see that. So where the heart and the authenticity connects. But right. Let me back up a bit. 3 years back, you decided to write a book. And then what happened?
Ooh, it was almost like all the other books that I wrote. It was as if I got a clear signal that today's the day you're going to start tapping on the computer. And I meditate in the morning, and sometimes I'll just get these little, I call them a divine download. And there was a small voice that said, start your book. And it was clear. It was in a very short sentence. It wasn't this long, big paragraph. It just said, start your book. And that's what I did. I literally opened up my computer, started writing out the chapters and what I wanted to convey to women in general. Women who say, I love what I do, but I hate to sell. I love my business, but I hate the process of selling. And I wrote the chapters based on that. The person I was speaking to was a woman who clearly loved what she did, but was afraid of the sales process. And I always say sales are the only way for every business to stay in business. And you can't avoid, resist, or pretend you don't have to sell if you want a thriving business. You have to learn how to do it in a way that resonates with you and feels good to you. So I wrote it with that person in mind, and all the chapters had to resonate with that person who truly resists selling.
This is wonderful. You know, I like it so much, what you're saying just now. You know, it's so strange that people who are passionate about things, they don't get it that finally the success is going to come out of selling. And there is absolutely no way you cannot sell.
Oh, that you hit the nail on the head. I talk to business owners every day, and they think, we'll just increase our marketing. I'll just do more prospecting on LinkedIn. And I said, that's great, but you still have to talk to people. You still have to be the one who talks to someone eye to eye, belly to belly, and has to sell value, has to be able to have a conversation with someone that piques their interest and moves them through the sales conversation. Just because you prospect or are in the process of talking to people or trying to talk to people, that's not enough. You actually have to talk to them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So back to your process. So you sat down and you structured the book, and you said, I'm going to have this 25 chapters. Was there the initial draft of what you were planning? Was it sort of linear in this fashion, or was it different and you actually reorganized it as you went along?
The second one, for sure. I wanted to have some sort of a frame around the book first. And then the more women I talked to, the more they revealed to me that they hate objections, or they fear rejection, or they hate following up. And so I shifted a lot of some of the content in there to reflect what they were telling me. So it was a work in progress, and it was some things were, they didn't necessarily come out and say, I don't like this. I just knew intuitively that was something that they had some resistance around, picking up the phone, like stepping into a powerful conversation with someone where there may be rejection involved. Look, everything in our life is about, you have a chance to be rejected. It doesn't matter whether it's your love life, your professional life, your business life. There's a chance for that. But how do you navigate through that in such a way that it doesn't hurt like you think it's going to?
Nice.
So it became a work in progress, and a lot of the stuff was moved around and placed in different ways. But once I got in the groove, I couldn't stop. I was so inspired every morning. I couldn't wait to get out of bed and start writing. And it became a process that flowed through me versus me trying to figure out, what do I write today? It was as if it was already in me and I just had to start typing away.
So how long did it take you to actually get the first draft out?
It was a few months. I would say it was close to 3 months before I got it to my editor.
Okay. And you obviously went back to the same publisher, or was this a new publisher?
I do my own self-publishing. So I have an editor who's edited the last four books of mine. And I self-publish everything. It's for me, it's easy. It's painless. It gets my book out when I want my book out versus going through a publishing company who could potentially trash half of it and I have to start all over again. This is my message, and I want my message out there, not someone telling me, oh, this won't sell, or oh, this isn't good enough.
That's powerful. Although that's a topic for another chat, and I would love to do that with you. But let's get back to the book now. So your first chapter, let's start with that. What is the old sales model that you're talking of to which you say we should say sayonara?
The model I'm talking about is the model of, like I said earlier, coming from your head. And I got to get this sale. I have a quota to make. I have babies to feed. I have a mortgage to pay. And it's all about the sale, all about getting someone to sign a contract or say yes to you. And there's a lot of energy that comes with force. There's some force and maybe a little manipulation and just subtle. It's all very subtle, but the energy is very clear that I am here to sell you something. You are here because you need something, and I am here to sell. Now, that's a very generic statement, but everybody can appreciate that, because we've all been sold to. We've all felt what it's like to have someone pretend they like you or want to help you, but they're really only trying to sell you something. And it's busting out of the model of, I want to sell you something, and it's going in your body and into your heart and saying, if you're the right person and if I'm the right person for you, then you and I are going to have a conversation where I'm going to listen to you, I'm going to uncover your needs, and I'm going to do it in a way where you are fully and truly respected. And if you say no, I'm okay with that. But if you say yes, I'll be okay with that as well. I don't use force or manipulation. There's none of that. And when you come from a genuine, authentic place, people feel that. They know you're there to not finesse that quick sale. They know that you're there for their best interest.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think there's a lot changing. The buyer is much smarter than you'd like to believe. There is this quote of David Ogilvy, the legendary ad man. He wrote a book called Ogilvy on Advertising. I'm sure you're familiar with it. And in that, there was this line where he wrote, and of course, he was talking of B2C. It was not a B2B kind of scenario, but he was talking of B2C. He was saying, the customer is not a moron. She's your wife.
That is good. That's really good. I know. We treat people as if they've never done an online search, never bought anything in their life, never been in a sales conversation. And what ends up happening is, you might say, like the old school version, you might say something to someone and it takes them right back to a sales scenario where someone did try to sell them something.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And then they say, oh, this looks familiar. Oh, typical salesperson. I'm not talking to that person, because you haven't updated your language. You haven't changed your approach. Hmm. And I'm not saying that sales hasn't radically changed. Sales has changed only because our world has changed. People have changed. The access to information has changed. So we have to meet people where they are, not where they used to be. We are here now, educated. Treat me like the educated consumer.
Absolutely. So that brings me to chapter six. Talk about today's smart and internet-empowered consumer. Talk to us about that.
Well, that's, we're all internet empowered now. I just yesterday, my garage door broke, and I was very internet empowered. My garage door went down, but it kept going back up, and I knew something was wrong. So I quickly went to the internet, and I knew I wasn't in an emergency situation, so I didn't have to make an immediate decision, but I looked around at four different companies. I called four different places. I allowed them to treat me the way that they treat everybody that picks up the phone and calls them. And I chose one specific company because of the way they engaged with me, talked to me down off the ledge, and helped me make a very informed decision. One gentleman picked up the phone, and he didn't do what everyone else did, which was, what's your name? What's your email address? Can I get your phone number in case we get disconnected? Which, by the way, screams 1990s. When do we barely get disconnected anymore. And it's, I know you're asking for your marketing efforts, what my email address is, so you can email me stuff if I don't buy. But he treated me like a real human being and said, all right, talk me. What's going on? What's happening? When was the last time you had your garage door serviced? And he asked me questions about me first, not for his marketing campaign. How'd you hear about us? He didn't care about where I got his information until after the conversation took off. He treated me like someone who was in a situation that needed some assistance. And went and hit the nail right on the head versus, let me make sure I understand where our marketing is working. How'd you hear about us? And then, of course, he asked me those questions, but I was okay with answering them because he treated me like a human being first, a woman with a problem who doesn't know anything about garage doors. And he made me feel like this place cares. And that's who I gave my $700 to yesterday.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And we miss this out so much, right?
Yep.
The whole idea of conversational marketing and stuff like that, it's not conversation first. It's give me your data first.
That's right. And it screams old school to me. That says to me, you have not taken into consideration that the world is different, the consumer is different, and we want to be treated differently. We're tired of the BS of the past. Now treat me like the informed consumer that I am right now. And I do a lot of work with law firms and like personal injury, family law, bankruptcy, and estate planning. All of those people that call a law firm are in a personal, very sad situation. If I'm calling a divorce attorney, it isn't likely because I'm having a great day. And when you say to me, sure, I'd be happy to help you. Can I get your phone number in case we get disconnected? And how'd you hear about us? If you do that, you're signaling to the client that you're not as important as me finding out if my marketing is working.
And absolutely.
Drives me crazy when that happens. So I so enjoy being the consumer sometimes because it lets me into another whole world, which was the garage door world of yesterday. And I had never called a garage door company, so I didn't know, but it proved to me that they're still treating their customers just like a divorce attorney or a personal injury attorney. They haven't updated their approach either. And a lot of companies are going to be left behind if they don't start realizing that put the consumer first and you'll win every time. Treat them like a human being first, then they will give you all the information you need.
So true. So true. So let's move on to chapter 11. People buy you first and not your business. And I want to know, whether are you talking about B2B or B2C, or is it both? And what's your take on this?
Gosh, I think it could be both, because we're all, when we're in a conversation, situation, meeting with someone, we're getting a sense of the human being that's in front of us, whether it's on a Zoom call, whether it's a face-to-face, whether it's a phone call. We're picking up on those cues of how are you as a human being as well. And that if you're treating me like I am a quote-unquote just another customer or a human being, that's very different. People are buying part of that. They're buying how you treat them first. They don't care how smart you are until you treat them well first. So whether you're a divorce attorney, a garage door company, or a web designer, it doesn't matter. Get into my world first and treat me like a human being. And that shows me that you really do care. So I'm buying the care that you have for me before your expertise.
It's time for a short break. Liz was emphatic about treating the customers as humans, demonstrating that you care and they will reciprocate. I asked her, in the days of global selling and remote selling, how effective is this? Are customers, in the absence of the human face-to-face connection, actually buying the brand? And that the salesperson is not vital in this decision anymore? We'll find out from Liz as we come back. Stay with us.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for Bits About Books and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. As we went into the break, I asked Liz if in the days of global selling and remote selling, the human connection is effective. Are customers actually buying the brand? And that the salesperson is not vital in that decision anymore? Let's find out from Liz. When we are selling across geographies, I mean, we are all selling globally today, right? In a global scenario where you're really not meeting people, you're really not shaking their hand, you're really not sitting down for a coffee, do you think that the brand has become more important today than the person actually?
Maybe in some cases, yes, but I don't care if I'm buying something in another country or in another state. If it is about a feeling that I get before I say yes. Because people buy on emotion. That's not new. That's just not my little snippet of the day. People buy emotionally. And if I don't get a good feeling, like yesterday, three people didn't give me a good feeling, I'm not giving you my money. So the feeling is, if the feeling comes first, and then my credit card comes out next.
Right. So let's connect this to your idea about the sales trust factor. I think that's the holy grail, right?
Yep.
The customer needs to trust you to give you his business. Actually, what he's giving is the fact that he has a problem and he believes that what you will give him will solve his problem. He's really buying the solution. He's not buying your product or your company or your brand or any of it. Correct?
Yes. He or she is buying the results that you're providing. And trust is a feeling. Trust is a feeling. We know deep inside when we pull the trigger, it's because there's a trust factor there and a feeling that I'm going to be taken care of.
And how do you go about building that when you are meeting somebody for the first time? So one thing you told, I think that's so valid in terms of the gentleman or the lady who spoke to you yesterday and asked you about your problem and so on. But what else do you do to build that trust?
Trust, oh boy, trust can show up in so many ways. Trust is how you answer the phone, how you engage with me in the first 5 seconds, how you listen to me, how you literally hear me and respond with what I said, not what you want to say. That you are in the moment with me, not, ooh, how do I respond to this? Or how do I sell this person? I can tell when somebody's in the moment with me, versus up in their head trying to figure out what they need to do next. Trust can show up in the way that you lean in and look at me on a video call. Trust could be your silence when you're truly listening to me instead of trying to, again, inject what you want to say. Trust shows up in the way that you don't push me into making a decision. You help guide me into a decision. So trust is, it can show up in so many different ways. And I tell people to imagine trust like one of those old-fashioned scales where you start putting a little tiny salt grain on it. And every time you do something well, another grain goes on that scale and another and another. And like I said, it's subtle. So it could be that you listen to me. You even used my name a few times. There's some trust there as well. And every time you do something that makes me, the buyer, feel good, you get another piece of salt on the scale. And eventually you tip the scale.
Let's move it a bit and talk about valuing the prospect and figuring out who is worth pursuing. That's one of your chapters, which comes up later.
Well, clearly it's about identifying your ideal client and people who are staying with you in the process. So what that means to me is if you have to chase people, if you have to follow up with someone 22 times, you are, in essence, chasing someone. You're not allowing the process to move as a collaborative process. And when you're engaging with someone, first, second, maybe third phone call, and you both have this engagement going on where it feels collaborative. It feels as though you're two parties at the same level. You're not looking at the prospect as greater than you or better than you. You're at that eye level with someone, and you both respect and treat each other with that respect because you've shown up with that respect right out of the gate. So when someone doesn't get back to you, or they brush you off or blow you off or completely dismiss you, that is because somewhere, somehow, a little bit of that energy was lost in your approach, possibly, where you gave the impression that you're sticking around and you're going to keep pursuing them. And so it's like a cat and mouse game. And if you have to pursue people in that way, instead of saying to someone, look, Mary, you and I are obviously we're not ready to make a decision right now. So how would you like me to stay in contact with you? How would you like us to communicate as we move through this process versus, okay, I'll follow up with you next week. Okay. And then I'll follow up again and I'll keep following up until you say no, because that's what I learned 30 years ago. Keep following up. Instead of saying to whoever you're dealing with, you and I want to treat you with respect through this process. And the last thing I want to do is keep bloating your inbox with my follow-up messages. How would you like us to move forward? And now it's collaborative. And now I can suss out who is someone who's coming on the journey with me or someone that needs to be pulled along.
It's so true, because a lot of times when I'm talking to, again, companies that we talk with and speak with and industry gatherings, I keep repeating this, that perhaps we don't realize that we're in a permission economy.
Yep.
Right?
You
really, no matter how smart you are, what great product you have, if the buyer is not giving you permission to engage, you cannot engage. It doesn't matter what you do. You can turn up with a cake on their birthday, but they're not going to engage.
That's right. And what we do when I watch salespeople is they'll just keep pushing and keep pushing instead of tapping the brakes a little bit and maybe even saying, hey, Bob, it sounds like things are slowing down, or it sounds like we need to tap the brakes before we step on the gas. Is there something we should discuss before we move forward and get a sense of where are you? I don't want to push someone who isn't in a place to be, isn't ready to make a decision. I would rather say, hey, why don't we take a step back? Maybe we need to revisit our conversation or talk about some other things right now before we even consider making a big leap forward. And what you're in essence doing is sending a message to the person that, A, I care. I'm not in it for the sale. I'm in it to find out where you are and to see if taking a step back is the best thing right now. And too many professionals will push back and say, well, I don't want to lose my momentum and I don't want to lose any steam. I worked really hard to get this client. Well, it's not about you. And that's the one thing that salespeople don't get. It's not about you. And the moment you make it about you, you have officially lost control.
Let's talk about better questions produce better sales results. What's going wrong with sales folks? Are we just not preparing enough? Are we not spending enough time actually researching a prospect? What is it that we are doing wrong?
Oh, there's a that could be another hour long conversation. There's some of that going on. I a lot of people right now, I'm noticing that they're sending a lot of prospecting messages out there. They're doing more of the volume prospecting and not really taking the time to maybe identify the right prospect, making sure that that prospect has the pain or problem or challenge that that salesperson or professional can solve. And they're spraying all over the place, hoping that something sticks to the wall. Then when they finally get someone to say yes to an appointment or yes to a conversation, they're coming into it again with that energy of I'm trying to sell you something. Now, it may be subtle, but sometimes their questions are not really thought out to get under the hood of what's really happening with that prospect situation. So I listen to a lot of recorded sales calls, tons of them. And boy, do they give me ammunition and information. And many people start out, many professionals start out talking about themselves and their company and how great they are and how much money they can save or time they can save someone and all the other people that they worked with. And nobody gives a crap about that. Nobody cares yet about who you've worked with until you find out about me and my problems first. So the questions, I feel like sometimes the questions don't go deep enough and people don't say, well, I want you to expand on that. Or what is that? What do you mean when you say that? Have you done anything else to try to fix that? How long has it been going on? Let's dig into the under the surface a little bit more. And just when you think you've asked the last question, there's probably one more that can get under the surface a little bit more to find out what's really going on. Because surface pain and surface problems don't close business. You've got to get to the root of what is going on.
It's also to do, I guess, with our whole fixation with speed.
Yes.
We want to close it. I mean, no salesperson is closing a deal. If the buyer didn't close it, it didn't close, period.
Right.
Right? You have written a chapter on how it's important to listen, right?
Yes.
This is the thing, that we are taught to be public speakers in schools, but nobody teaches us to be a good listener.
That's right, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So we are all primed to write answers to questions, but nobody has taught us to ask questions.
Very true. And questions that have some feeling attached to them. The who, what, when, where, why, how, that's not enough anymore. We've got to get under the surface of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's jump across to the chapter on power of technology and social media. Give me your take on that.
Oh, this is my favorite one. And because I believe technology doesn't close sales. Technology can help, but people close sales. People will always close sales. Now, unless your website just says buy now and you put your credit card in, that I'm not talking about that. Right. I'm talking about the sales where a human has to have another conversation with a human, when two people have to come together to gain an understanding about someone's objections, objectives, or pains or problems. Two human beings coming into a conversation where one needs help and one may have the solution. And technology doesn't do that. And people are trying to use technology to close business. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing in essence is pushing people away. I can't tell you how many times a day on LinkedIn I will connect with someone. And I think it's a really genuine connection. Mm-hmm. And someone will say, I read an article or congratulations on your new book or I watched your video. And then less than 15 seconds later, they're trying to sell me something. And so I usually email them right back and say, boy, did I make a mistake. I really took your LinkedIn request as a true request to have a relationship, a LinkedIn relationship, but apparently I was wrong. All you did was want to sell me something. And I know it's not me to change the up to me to change the world, but I will respond back and say, if you think this process is working, it's not. And you have officially turned me off. And I would appreciate if you don't email me anymore. And I never, ever get a response back, because I'm sure people are like, oh, yeah, she's just pissed off. Or, but what they don't understand is when you spray people like that, it's spraying a repellent. It's not an attractor. It is a pure repellent. And then people will say, oh, social media doesn't work. I tried LinkedIn. That stuff doesn't work. Yeah, it doesn't work because you're using a crappy approach. That's why it doesn't work. So if you could use technology in a way, again, where you bring your heart into it, not just your head, and play the numbers game, technology is wonderful. Technology has helped us a great deal, but it will not change your bottom line if you're using an old school approach with a new technology.
So what are your two or three tips for people who want to do it right in social media?
Is send me a message that makes it look like you sat there and tapped it out just for me, where it doesn't feel generic. It you use my name. I want it to look like you sat down and said, hey, Liz, happy Tuesday. And know that you wrote it today, not just some bot who wrote that. And I want the message to feel like it was truly written to me. Doesn't have to be a love story. It just has to say you matter instead of that generic BS that people are sending. And I would say, second word I would say is stop sending the same message. Don't say to me, not sure if you got my first message, I'm sending it again. Not sure if you got my last seven messages, so I'm going to send it again. No, I got them. You just didn't pique my interest because you didn't say anything that made me that made me want to get back to you. And the third one is, don't you dare send me an email that says, where I have to choose A, B, or C why I didn't respond to you. That one, oh my God, that infuriates me. It when someone says, maybe now isn't the time isn't right, or Liz, this isn't for you, or I should call you in a few weeks, pick one and get back to me. No, that's not my job. You haven't piqued my interest. I'm not going to tell you where you're failing.
Absolutely.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos, and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Liz, I totally enjoyed chatting with you, and all the best for the book, and I'm sure our listeners would love to listen to what you just said.
Oh, thank you so much for your time. I enjoyed our conversation.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations on breakthrough books. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.